Well, welcome everyone. Good evening.
Good evening.
My name is Mike Wilker, and I'm a pastor in the ELCA, the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America, and I'm also the director of the Lutheran Volunteer Corps. And since some of you I haven't met yet this week, I'll say just a little bit about what LVC is. It's a one-year service program where volunteers spend 1 year working here in the United States in some social ministry program or a nonprofit organization. Welcome. I'm just giving introductions. You want to join us?
Yeah, I was just trying to remember what it was.
Oh, okay. This is Building Inclusive Community, Tools for Building Inclusive Community.
That's nice.
And I was just describing Lutheran Volunteer Corps, where I work as the executive director. So the volunteers spend 1 year working in these social justice organizations. They might be working directly with homeless people in a day program, like in Washington, D.C., or they might be running an after-school program in the Twin Cities, or they might be doing environmental education and science education in Milwaukee, or working on a prison ministry where the folks are coming out of prison and they're returning into society, so our volunteer is working with that program for a full year. Or they might be working on Capitol Hill, like with Lutheran Immigration and Refugee Services or Lutheran World Relief are two examples of placements as well. So anywhere from direct service to national advocacy issues. And in addition to working there full-time, the volunteers also live in community with one another. Households of 4 to 7 people, all working at these different organizations, but then sharing economic resources with one another within their household, as well as their joys and struggles. And the third kind of tenet that we live out in LVC is that we encourage one another to live a simple, sustainable lifestyle, too. So those are the three kind of tenets or things we try to live out: the work for justice, the life in community, and the simple, sustainable lifestyle. And so while I've been here this week, I've been sharing a few things that I've learned as executive director of LVC and partly from other aspects of my life too. So on Monday, talked with folks about work and how we live out God's call in various arenas of our life. And on Tuesday, we talked about Bonhoeffer and some strategies for resisting evil. That was kind of like the social justice one. And yesterday, we talked about swimming in streams of sustainability and looking at ways that we can live sustainably in the world. And tonight, I want to give you, share with you three tools that we've been learning these last few years on building inclusive and diverse communities. And they're tools that we've, and you may also have encountered these before, but we were reintroduced to them by Eric Law. He's an Episcopalian priest in the Los Angeles area, and he has helped form what's called the Kaleidoscope Institute, and they work on helping congregations and institutions become more multicultural and diverse, and being able to do excellent ministry in their communities and settings. And so these are some of the tools that he has shared with LVC again. And LVC is in partnership with the Kaleidoscope Institute now. We're a member of what's called the Kaleidoscope Collective to help us on a journey to inclusive community as well. These are just what I see as three simple building blocks. And that's kind of what I see ourselves having time for today. But there's many other ways to build inclusive and diverse communities too. And we can talk about those after the session. Or these papers that I have will point you to some of Eric Law's books, as well as other resources that you can continue to explore and develop as well. So, that's a little intro about me. The first thing that we'll do is the first tool. I'm going to take one of these and pass it around. So what we're going to look at first is what it's called the Respectful Communication Guidelines. And we've developed this little acronym out of the word respect. And what we'll do with this is that I'd like to invite one of you, we'll just kind of go around, we can start like that, and one of you to read the letter, and then the words, are we out of them? Maybe we need to share
some. Is this in here?
Okay, great.
Back over this way.
This is great. Sonia, we should have made more copies. So we'll, if we would start off, one of you can read the letter, and then what it equals or means afterwards. And then after each one, we'll just pause for a moment, and I'll ask you if you have any other ways of saying that concept. Okay? So I'll start off by reading R, and then I'll open it up for one of you all to read E, and etc. R. Take responsibility for what you say and feel without blaming others. Take responsibility for what you say and feel without blaming others. Are there other ways that you might say this kind of concept? You don't have to. It could be just simple the way it is.
Using I messages.
Using I messages. I feel this way. This is what I think.
This is what I believe.
Mm-hmm. Good. Okay, would someone like to read the next letter?
E. Use empathetic listening.
And is there another way that you'd like to say this? Or that you could say this?
Putting yourself in their place.
Putting yourself in the other person's place when you're listening to them.
Be present when listening.
Be present when listening. Not being distracted by the noises outside. The next letter. A volunteer.
S. Be sensitive to differences in communication styles.
How would you say this in another way?
Be aware that not everyone is visual or auditory.
Bigger than that, but like I know that in Seattle, in our shelter system, if you go from North Seattle to South Seattle, they serve different communities, and so they're staffed by people from those communities typically. And a meeting in North Seattle will look very different than a meeting in South Seattle. Like we're a lot, we tend to be very quiet and maybe not use our hands less in North Seattle, and in South Seattle, the meetings are typically louder and people, there's more hand gestures, and so it's just kind of a cultural thing.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah, it's recognizing and being sensitive to different cultural ways of communicating. Let's do the next letter. Would a volunteer like to read the next letter?
P. Ponder what you hear and feel before you speak.
Are there other ways to say this?
Think before you speak.
Think before you speak. Yeah. Uh-huh. Any other ways?
Don't blurt out off the top of your head.
I think it's also, it goes back to the empathetic listening too, because really listening to someone and pondering what they have said and speaking something in response, rather than spending the time when they're talking and thinking what you're going to say next.
Mm-hmm.
So it goes really well with the listening, thinking, reflecting, instead of just, when my turn comes around, I'll know what to say. And the other part is
binary. Yeah.
I think it's easy to be confrontational if you feel strongly in a different way about a particular subject. And what this says to me is, hey, put a governor on that a little bit at least. I mean, I think you can be too careful too about how you say things. You know, you're just trying to say it just right.
Yeah. Someone like to do the next letter? Read the next letter for us. E, by the way.
E, examine your own assumptions and perceptions.
Is there another way you would say this?
You could, when someone is saying something, you think they're saying it to mean one thing, and you can clarify by saying, did you mean this?
Know your biases.
Know your own biases. Mm-hmm. The next letter? Someone would like to read that?
C, keep confidentiality.
How would you say that in another way?
Don't tell everything you know.
What you see here and hear here stays here.
The last letter. Someone
T,
read that,
trust ambiguity because we are not here to debate what is right or wrong.
Any other ways to say that?
Everybody's opinion matters.
Any other ways?
I think there's a better way. Ambivalence is better to me than ambiguity. Ambiguity implies lack of clarity. Uh-huh. Ambivalence allows you to hold two concepts simultaneously.
Right. Trust ambivalence.
Yes.
Okay. And another way of saying that would be, there's another way to look at that rather than a better way.
Thank you.
Good. So trust that there's another way to look at that.
You said that so carefully.
Well, does anyone have any questions or concerns about these as principles for how we'll communicate and listen to one another during this session tonight? Then do I have your agreement that we'll try to live out these principles for respectful communications while we're here? If so, raise your hand, okay?
Do you have another piece of paper we haven't seen?
Oh, okay. We might have to share some more. We made 20 copies. All right.
What do you do, like, if someone isn't comfortable with them? Do they have to leave? How do you handle that?
Yeah, I didn't raise my hand.
You didn't raise your hand?
No.
Okay. Did you have a concern?
I do.
Which,
what
do you have?
Confidentiality.
Then what's the concern?
How far does that go? Are we not to talk about anything we talk about in this room tonight?
Let's talk about that and decide. Yes, Jen?
I think maybe taking your lessons learned but not the names associated with, so if Krista tells a personal story, then what I learned from that story, I would feel comfortable sharing, but not that it's Krista's name associated with that story, not identifying a person.
Mm-hmm. Does that sound appropriate? And helpful as a way to keep confidentiality is you can share stories, what you've learned here, but try not to use names.
I suppose it implies a depth that I didn't expect would be affiliated with the topic this evening. Mm-hmm. Are we disclosing things we would not be comfortable having others hear?
What I first heard on that one was that I respect confidentially people, friends, where I have been in another context, not this group, and we have talked about things there, and I need to respect that person's offerings in a confidential way.
Okay, I like that. I'll go with that. Mm-hmm.
Would you restate it for how you heard that, so that we can all
hear? Well, what I've heard is that we're not bringing in this room confidences that we said we'd keep with others.
Say it louder.
What I heard this gentleman say is that I've made confidentiality commitments with others outside this room, and I'm not going to bring those in to share.
Oh, yes, that's another way, yeah?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But as far as I'm concerned, for the sake of the group, you can quote me any way you want.
Outside the group, I am not afraid. If I offer it to this group, it's public knowledge.
Yeah.
So is this an exercise in the process? You know, so we're basically establishing what the ground rules of the process are for future reference to experience the experience here, and it's not relevant unless we abide by all the points of the process. So there may be nothing shared here that needs to be kept in confidence, but in the event that there is, it will be tacitly understood that what is said is in confidential statement, right?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, and that there may be, like, I don't have an intention of what the questions that I'll put forward to you, mm-hmm. that you'll be revealing, like, grave and very important personal secrets here. But there might be someone that shares a story and would like to do that in a way that feels comfortable and safe, recognizing that it might not be the way that they would tell it in another context. So to recognize that, that they're sharing something valuable for themselves in this setting, and to take that carefully and to share it, like maybe what Jana said too, with a degree of respect for the people that you're meeting with tonight.
I think there's a huge difference between our conversation in here and a year's communal living together, like the volunteers, where mm-hmm. five or six of them live for a year together. Mm-hmm. There's a confidentiality issue there much larger than in here.
Yeah. Well, and confidentiality can be different from group to group. This can be a tool that you can use in your congregational setting or another institutional setting, and to define what things are going to stay within your small group or be a part of the congregational discussion is very important to set those boundaries at the beginning.
Well, I think the confusion for me is that coming into a public setting like this where anyone's invited, mm-hmm. it's implied that anything can be shared mm-hmm. unless the individual says, I'd like to keep this confidential. Mm-hmm. So if this was presented that keep confidentialities when requested, mm-hmm. then it's much easier to accept, because it seems odd to me to say, yes, I agree, as you ask us to uh-huh. agree, to keep everything we say confidential.
All right. How does that sound to everybody? Keep confidentiality sure. when requested by somebody in the group tonight.
Yeah. Sounds like a good idea.
Okay. All right. Good. Thank you. So that also, that process that we just observed and participated in perhaps responds back to Chris's question. What happens when there's not assent? I didn't see you not raise your hand, so I'm glad that you called yourself out on that. So what we would do is what we just did here, is to find out where the dissent is and to try to come up with a framework that fits for this purpose for this evening. And I feel that we've done that so far. There's, but yes.
What's the process of monitoring performance?
When we go through this?
These guidelines.
Well, when we go through the small group exercise that we'll do in a little bit, you'll be monitoring yourselves. And if you're sensing that someone is not working through this, you can feel free to say, well, I would like you to, I think that, you seem to be distracted listening to what's going on outside the group rather than listening here. So you can try to monitor yourself and one another in this. I'm not going to be able to be in every small group, so I won't be a monitor or the monitor of every conversation.
So basically you give permission to have conversation about these. But do you have a structured way of monitoring performance so that you actually take stock at the end of a session? Let's just go back through these.
Oh, to see.
To see how we did.
Yeah. We, in an ongoing process, yes, and we would try to start each of our gatherings in maybe a shorthand way of how we do these respect guidelines. And you could come back and evaluate them in the next meeting. How did that go the last time that we were together? Were there things that we need to reevaluate? So that each time you come together, as a community, you check in again about these respect guidelines. There's also other ways to use these and to help an organization or a group talk respectfully with one another. If any of you were at the Obama speech last night, you saw Chris start off the conversation by calling people for respectful communication, to speak directly to the, respond directly to Barack Obama's speech, to speak from their own thoughts, experiences, and ideas about that, rather than doing crosstalk. So he laid some ground rules on how we were going to communicate in that large group setting right away from the beginning. And it was, I think, a real successful example of helping people respectfully communicate with one another. This set goes through, rather than doing it briefly like Chris did at the beginning of last night's session, takes time and can lay some deeper ground rules for an ongoing process that you might be involved in a community. Any other comments or questions about these guidelines or respectful communication? Then the second tool that I want to introduce you all to is something that we've been doing just a little bit of in the other sessions, and that's a mutual invitation process. And so what we'll need to do in just a moment is we're going to do the rest of the setting in some small groups of six, please. And I'd like to ask, mutual invitation is that in these small groups, one person will start off responding to the question at hand. And the first question that we'll do is, what's your favorite ice cream? What's your favorite ice cream flavor? And you'll have the opportunity to do three things. One is to respond to the question, answer it as you would like. Secondly, your other second choice could be to pass for now. And you could then, at the end, after everyone else has had a chance to respond, then respond and say what your favorite ice cream flavor is. And then the third response or possible response is simply to pass. And that means that you don't want to answer or respond to that question. And so that's the simple explanation of it. On here on your sheet that I passed out to you all, this mutual invitation tool ensures that everyone in the small group has an opportunity to speak, and that it's a way to hear everyone's thoughts or opinions or responses to the question. And so let's, if you would, how about if you form into groups of six, move the chairs around, and if you also are sitting next to people that you would like to not be in the same group with, you can move around. As you're forming, please introduce yourself by saying each other's names. Saying your names.
We need one more person.
Hope would like to be in a group.
We've got one more.
I'm
John.
He was.
Okay. Has everyone introduced your names to one another?
Yes.
Okay. Good. So if one of you would start, maybe find one person to start, and the question, this is the simple question right now to practice this, is what is your favorite ice cream?
No.
What's your favorite ice cream flavor? And so one person start, and then you respond to the question, or you can also pass for now, and the group can come back to you at the end, or you can simply pass, even if you're the first person. And then, but once you pass, or pass for now, or respond, then you invite the next person. And you don't have to invite the person on either side of you. It can be interesting and helpful to invite someone across the circle from you to be the next person to share. Okay? Any questions about this before we begin? Okay, so practice with sharing this response. What's your favorite ice cream flavor?
It's really good.
Okay, good. Once you're done, you can talk about ice cream and tell everybody else. If your group finishes, you can just talk about ice cream in general if you'd like, until we all are done.
Well, this is a question.
Have you gone around?
Yeah. Question?
Yeah. I'm going to have everybody, I'm going to give you a chance to ask your question in a large group. So I think I overheard it, and it's a helpful question.
But doesn't that happen? There will be some that dominates and drives me nuts, especially when it's early on, because especially initially, before you know it's going to be So you could have run So then you're empathetic listening.
So that's where you can have to
Are all the groups done? All the groups done going around once? Okay. If you'd turn your attention back to the center for just a second, you don't have to turn your chairs all the way back because you're going to remain in your small groups. How'd that go for y'all? You had a question I know you wanted
well,
to
Well, first the comment, we had somebody that went on and on and on, three wouldn't stop.
Yeah.
So Wendy, how do you interrupt?
It could be helpful for me to have said, just briefly, give a little time frame over what the response could be. So I could say briefly in a couple of words, share what your favorite ice cream flavor is. Okay. Or later on in the session, I'll actually put a time frame on it. Each of you respond 1 or 2 minutes to this question.
And that's where the other question came, is can we ask clarifying questions when that person is describing?
What I found is most helpful is to have other comments be held, for the most part, until after everyone has had a chance to respond. And then to, if it's appropriate for the for that session or facilitation, then to let people have the more open conversation going on. But for the first go-round, let everyone speak once before there's a lot of more general conversation. Okay. Other questions or comments about this practice? In our staff meetings at Lutheran Volunteer Corps, we start each of our weekly staff meetings by using mutual invitation like this as a way to check in with one another. We have a staff that's all across the country, and we only meet together or even talk with one another on the phone once a week. And so at the beginning of our staff meetings, we ask each other, how are you doing? As a way to enter into the staff meeting for that week. And we do this by process of mutual invitation around the country, asking our colleagues, how are you doing, Rachel? And then Rachel would respond, and then Rachel would ask the next person. And it helps us set a virtual table of hospitality where we're inviting the next person, and usually in our setting by name. And that could be another very helpful thing to do, is that as you are in your small group, try to use one another's names as you invite the next person to speak. That can be a way of graciously inviting that person to be the next responder. So that's one way that we use it.
Mm-hmm. I was wondering about this talk stick idea.
Yeah.
And how that differs, because if you're really feeling you want, someone might actually reach for this stick in some ways that's used. There's not a similar way to ask, can I now speak?
No. Right. No, in this process, everyone waits until they're invited by another member of the group to speak.
Key difference.
But everyone is invited to speak. And everyone has the opportunity also not to speak. In some situations of conflict within LVC communities, we've also used this tool, mutual invitation, as a way for the city coordinator to first ask a question, and allowing everyone by mutual invitation in the household to respond to that question. And it can be a very conflicted situation. And yet, if we take some facilitation on the part of what that question will be, but it allows each person at the start of the conversation to say what their perspective is on that question. And then we've gone into a general conversation, like when you guys said, okay, we're done with the first response. Now what should we do? We'll talk about it in general, have the kind of general conversation about ice cream. And so again, everyone enters into that general conversation first feeling that they've had the opportunity to speak and that everyone has listened to them, and that the energy, in a sense, in the group has been focused in a careful way on that one person, what they're saying. This also helps for those of us that like to talk a lot and might be in a certain personality style or cultural communication style where they'll keep on talking and talking without graciously inviting other people to speak. So if you have this set up as a practice, at first it can feel awkward, but like other practices, if you use it over time, it becomes to be a new way, or the so-called set normal way, of communicating about topics. And as you get used to it, like we're starting to in LVC, you can start shaping it and using it for different settings, not just for the check-in, which is a fairly low conflict situation, but for the higher conflict situations as well. Yeah?
Just to speak from my experience in my LVC house, we used consensus, and it was also a lot about buy-in, you know, as to if everybody bought into the idea that this was going to be how we would communicate. After time, I mean, a few times, really, it just became natural, and just became, we didn't look at the paper anymore, we didn't have to think about it consciously, it was just kind of a you know, very conscious team effort, but it wasn't a process so much as just kind of how we communicated then after a while.
Mm-hmm. Yes?
I guess I would affirm the concept as well. I've experienced it in other settings, not using this specified, but where you had to listen and not respond, but speak your own mind. And I've been in a lot of meetings where I never got to say a thing unless you just had very strong feelings and interrupted someone else. And I think you lose a lot. And it's just a very special affirming.
Just
have a chance to
speak
whatever it is.
Good. Other comments or questions before we move on? The next thing that we're going to do is use this mutual invitation tool and respectful guidelines in a community Bible study. It's going to be a very brief Bible study, 30 minutes, I think. We're going to look at one of the texts for this upcoming Sunday's lessons in the Common Lectionary. So it's just, I just chose one of the four texts coming up this Sunday. Didn't have any particular, you know, pulling out, oh, okay, this is what we're talking about. We're just going to use this text and then use the process of community Bible study. That, again, is something that you all might have experience in other formats, but it's a third building block for building inclusive and diverse communities. So first of all, for those of you that like to be able to read the text and not just hear it, we want to make sure that you have Bibles. So does everybody have a Bible that would like one? I can get Bibles. I'm going to give you four of these pieces of paper because we have more. I gave each group four of these sheets, so you'll have to share them. I'm sorry we didn't make enough copies for everybody. And Paul thankfully reminded me about Vespers is at 7:30. We want to try to finish at 7:15, so it won't be quite, what's that? We won't go the full 30 minutes, but so I'll try to give some framework on the responses that we'll make. What we'll do is, first of all, I'm just going to lay out the process here for you all. The first thing in your small groups is to read the respectful guidelines one more time and invite one another to assent to them within your small group. Then the second thing to do is that we're going to read the Bible passage three times in your small groups. And the Bible passage I've written up here on the board. And after each reading, you'll invite one another to share your reflection. The first time through, number three on here, is that you'll invite one another to capture a word, a phrase, or an image that you have when listening to the passage for the first time. and invite somebody to read that passage. Take a moment of silence after the passage has been read. And then using mutual invitation, invite each of you to share that word, image, or phrase. So the first time round, it's very brief, just a word, an image, or a phrase. And that's all. You don't have to explain why that word, image, or phrase is the one. Just say what the phrase is. That should take no longer than 5 minutes to go around, or less for you all in groups of six. Then, after you've all shared that one image or phrase, we're going to consider this question. What gifts come from your own people that can be shared with other people? So that will be the question as you hear the text read for the second time through. Reflect upon this question, take a moment of silence to reflect, and then using mutual invitation, invite the person, each person, to share your reflection or response to this question. I'll ask that try to do this in 1 minute or 2 minutes at most in your response here. Then, the third time through, you're going to ask one another to reflect on the question that's under number 11 here. What does God invite you to do, be, or change through this passage? So read that question for everybody when you get to that section. Then read the passage a third time. Take a moment of silence. And then using mutual invitation, invite each person to share again around. Again, try to keep that to 1 or 2 minutes there. Then when you're done with that, in this session we won't have any general conversation in your small group after you've all shared. End the session with a prayer within your circle. Join hands, and you can think about something that you thank God for today and something that you ask God for today. And you can do that by going around the circle after you're holding hands, and it's like you might have heard the squeeze prayer. So you respond or you speak it out loud, and when you're done, you squeeze the hand next to you. And again, you could speak it out loud or say it silently to your heart and then squeeze the hand. Okay. So, any questions before you begin? I will floating around. So if you have questions as the process is going along, feel free to call me over for asking a question. Okay? So start off by reading the respect guidelines briefly within your group, and then read the passage from Romans the first time through, and listen to capture a word, phrase, or image. And then use mutual invitation in order to share that image with one another.
That's good.
Oh, I'm going to
I'm speaking the truth in Christ. I am not lying. My conscience confirms it out of the Holy Spirit. I have great sorrow and unceasing anguish. For I wish that I might myself, where Christ is to honor Christ, for the sake of my own people, my kindred, according to the flesh.
Would you like to read it out loud?
I am speaking to you, I am not lying. My conscience confirms it out of the Holy Spirit.
To them belongs the future, unceasing anguish, according to the flesh.
They are Israelites, and to them belong the adoption of the Lord and the covenants, the giving of the law, the worship, and the promises. To them belong the patriarchs, from them, according to the flesh, comes the Messiah.
I think that means we'll read it three times.
Throughout the process.
I'm not sure if that's a word out of here. The word separation. I saw it that way on the show.
Yes.
So we're ready to go.
I don't.
What I'm saying is for the sake of my own people, in considering the questions.
That's an image that jumps out at you. Good chance.
Before you read it, I think I've shared your phrase. Now read it aloud and with this question in mind. What gifts come from beliefs?
What's the second question?
This is the second question. Yes, so read the passage aloud a second time with this question in mind. Have a moment of silence and then invite me to respond in 1 minute or so.
They don't have
gifts come from your own
covenants with them, gave them the law. They have true worship, they have received.
I am speaking the truth. I'm not lying. My conscience confirms it by the Holy Spirit. I have great sorrow and unceasing anguish in my heart. For I wish that I myself were accursed and cut off from Christ for the sake of my own people, my kindred, according to the flesh. They are Israelites, and to them belong the adoption, the glory, the covenants, the giving of the law, the worship, the promises. But to them belong the patriarchs, and from them,
do we discuss this now, or are we just
Can I help you?
Step 6, and we're stuck.
How narrow is it?
Yeah, I'm not sure what. We've gone around and James said, I don't understand exactly what's in verse 3. So again, the question is, and he said, I need help. So then it was.
Okay, and you shared the word of praise.
No, I never did for you that.
Or you asked him.
Really?
For to say this, I was that I need help with this, I'm not quite sure.
Organization.
Would you like to?
I'm struggling with this.
You're through to the reading of the second line.
If you take them in context, as it's true for me. Your own school begins.
If I could invite you to read the passage, one of you
those who believe in Christ,
and then
my church.
To this question, what gifts
it's actually
from your own people?
So I wanted to say,
but I have
but I did share scripture that actually said about the very people that the gospel should
be in your world.
In your mind, you don't have a
medical
the work you think you have for our church is kind of involved in
they have the gifts
and the response. What gifts come from your own people that can be shared with other people?
And so it's really an overwhelming question.
Forever. I have great sorrow and unceasing anguish in my heart. For I could wish that I myself were accursed and cut out from Christ for the sake of my own people, my kindred according to the flesh. They are Israelites, and to them belong the adoption, the glory, the covenant, the giving of the law, the worship, and the promises. To them belong the patriarchs, and from them, according to the flesh, comes the Messiah.
Yeah, the question, that's good.
God blessed forever.
Say the question again.
What does God invite you to do in this place?
The next part is that we're about to read the script. Question 9, what does God invite you to do? I can read this now. This is a new advice. You improve your advice.
Well, I'm very troubled with this message.
I speak from the truth in Christ. I'm not lying.
I don't know that I have an answer to this question. I think maybe some of it lies in questioning your identity.
Have you read the passage of the session?
We don't know how to respond to that.
So,
separation.
I get
When I read the passage, I was seeing that Paul was saying many things in his my people, my own flesh, and he lists the whole bunch of gifts that I see. It inspired me to think about the gifts of my own family and my own Meriden Township people in Minnesota. The gifts that we have that we can share with Paul. So that's why it inspired me to love those so much, especially in Paul. Multicultural is word of envy. It's the same question. From our
willing to put myself back.
Kind of getting beyond the sort of teacher.
That's how I moved away from that connection. So maybe I should have formulated
a
question.
We're struggling with the structure of what we're doing here. Let's suppose take it out of this here. It was announced that a group were going to watch a movie and discuss it afterwards. And so afterwards, we come to the end and the discussion starts in this way. Well, the lighting wasn't real. You get into the technicalities and never get around, for the evening.
Yeah, he wants.
And I think we're having a challenge with the technicalities part. In order to get to the movie. I've got two different questions we were asked to consider. One up there and then a different one here.
Yep, what's God calling me to? But the last one, what's God calling me to?
All I was saying is after the second reading, I think, or with the second reading, we will do.
Work on that question.
Work on that question, but it was also says, this question.
So the one
email existed, he wrote long letters.
All the economic.
The process of doing this. But not enough of us.
Yeah, right.
Are we all in favor? Here we go.
That idea of having to come up with something, which you just
you would pick a pretty tough
script first. Just getting together and I challenge the process.
If I could call people together, it's 7:17. And you all might not have finished the whole process.
Keep it confidence.
There's a, and so we won't process everything as a large group. I was talking with this group here because. But would you like to? Would one of you like to share what it was like for you guys?
I think we got stuck on the side. We were trying to follow the rules, and we didn't see the. When we got to the second reading, we had trouble with that question and the reading, and we didn't know what to do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We all felt that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Your group felt that as well. So two things here. Well, first of all, I apologize to that group because I was with that group over there. Because one thing, there were two things that I think I could have done better here. One is that there is a way that I've explained this process that is quite simple from my perspective that has worked a number of times. And I'll say that way as well to have you hear that now too, is that this is also an ancient process used in many different cultures around the world called Lectio Divina. And so the simple process there is for the small group to read it through one time and for everyone to listen for a word, phrase, or image that resonates in their heart and to speak that word, phrase, or image to the small group. Read the text a second time and to respond to a question like this that the facilitator or leader might have devised, or to simply say why that word, phrase, or image is resonating, to explain it a little bit more. Within a time frame. And then the third time through, you read the text the third time through, and then you respond to the question, what is God calling me or us, you could put it either way, us to do, change, or be in response to this text, seeing that the Spirit could be calling you through that. So that would be a three-step process. Yeah?
Our group, I think, all agreed that that might work in a psalm, or a parable with a few verses that we have things, but to jump into a paragraph of a letter with no front, back, middle, center is a, maybe too strong to say, but a not a right way to do that passage.
I think we agree with that over here.
Okay.
I think it was the text that was the stumbling block.
The process was not assembly block. Yeah. It was trying to do these things yeah. with this piece of text.
Okay. So there's two other things then to learn. One is, which of the four texts could I have chosen? There is a psalm coming up, Psalm 145, and it's got some beautiful imagery to it. I looked at that, looked at the other two, but I thought that this one was inspiring to me, so that's why I chose this one. And so I thought it was inspiring. So, but the selection of the text is important, but it's also what we've learned is that if the leader is too determinative on which biblical text happens, the leader can use the text itself as a way to shape or guide or force or coerce even the conversation and the organization in a certain direction. So in a regular weekly cycle, to use simply one of the appointed texts that the church would be looking at already is a way to allow the group itself to determine the focus of the discussion and what's coming up. So there might have been a different text. I'm going to try to go quickly here because it's almost time for Vespers. The second thing is that this group, in talking with them, also we talked about that maybe my question was a little bit too general and could have been focused a little bit more carefully for the particular situation. So how you choose the question as you facilitate the group is really important as well. I don't know right off the top of my head what would be a different way of formulating the question now. I'm sorry about that. But that's which is the question is very important here. So maybe just having as an introduction practice for you all, just to have the second question be, why is this resonating in your heart? What about this word phrase or image is resonating for you? And allow you to share from that perspective. So, any other questions? I'm feeling like we should be breaking now.
Well, I just want to come back to the other side of what this, I think I agree with what people were saying about it was a difficult text, and the question was maybe made it even more difficult. But I think, to go back to what you said about the reconciled conversation guidelines, so once that becomes sort of, once you're used to doing it, I think it's important to struggle with texts like these in this way, and questions that are like that. I mean, I think for an introductory thing, yeah, it's something we can kind of experience it more generally or openly, easily, for lack of a better word. But I think too often in Bible study we choose easy texts and don't wrestle with them. So I think that's the other side. But once we start owning, living, second naturing sort of this method, I think it would be important to struggle with all the texts that are appointed for Sunday, not just which one or two of them might be.
Okay. We have 7 minutes to Vespers. I'm going to say a couple things. I am around all the way till Monday, so if you'd like to talk more about this process with me in individual conversations, please find me, seek me out, and or after Vespers tonight, I'll be over at this doorway here if you have questions that you want to talk about. And let's use Vespers as a way to conclude in prayer our time that we've shared together. Okay? Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.